The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman. As always, I'm joined by Gray Oldenburg and Nathan Glidewell. Now let's jump into AAA. First story we have today is in the past week, there have been changes to various football coaching staffs around the country. At Clemson, Dabo Swinney hired TCU offensive coordinator Garrett Riley to the same position. At Ohio State, Ryan Day promoted wide receivers coach Brian Hartline to the offensive coordinator position. And at Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin hired Alabama defensive coordinator Pete Golding to the same position. What do y'all think about these hires?
I think they're very, very interesting. I think the one that really sticks out to me is the Garrett Riley going to Clemson to be that offensive coordinator that he was at TCU the past few years. I think you know, Clemson's got a chance to build around Cade Klubnik and, you know, kind of build what they have in the past. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I wanted Garrett Riley to come to Alabama and take Bill O'Brien's spot, but with the whole situation with his contract still going on, and then, you know, Garrett Riley gets to go to Clemson, and, you know, Dabo Swinney is going to have a great offensive coordinator this year. But as far as, like, Pete Golding to Ole Miss, I think that's probably one of the happiest decisions I've seen from Pete Golding to make. So it'd be very interesting to see who fills his spot. I think Charlie Strong right now is the front runner to take this position. But, like, Jeremy Pruitt, he's always there. I know there's controversy around him. But I'd really like to see Charlie Strong take that position.
Yeah, Garrett Riley really proved himself this season at TCU. The only thing that really worries me is how he performed against the Georgia defense in the national championship game. Didn't feel like he had control of that game on the offensive end. Max Duggan looked terrible. Also like to touch on Brian Hartline at Ohio State. It's reported that Ryan Day might give up play calling duties and hand them to Hartline. I think Hartline's a great guy to give that to. He's really helped develop the wide receivers there. He's some of the notable names are Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Jamison Williams, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and Marvin Harrison Jr. All those guys have been really successful, and I think he'll really fit well there. And then at Ole Miss, hiring Pete Golding, that defense there was terrible this year. Felt like that was sort of a step down for Golding to move there, but it kind of gave him more freedom to go there with Nick Saban not being over him, calling kind of all the plays and stuff. So that's something to really look forward to for Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin.
I don't know. From Pete Golding's standpoint, obviously – it's a step down, you know, you're going from Alabama to a program in Ole Miss, but, you know, you mentioned his freedom to call plays. I know Lane Kiffin's not going to be over him as much, but from Lane Kiffin, I wonder really what he saw from Pete Golding this year that really caught his eye, wanted to get him to come to Ole Miss.
I mean, just looking at the stats, this year they ranked number 9 overall in the nation, number 2 in SEC in scoring on the defensive end, number 13 in total defense, number 3 in the SEC, and only give up 18.2 points per game and 318 yards per game. So, I mean, that's something to look at, better than what they had this year.
Yeah, I guess it's just all personal preference. You know, me being an Alabama fan, you always pick out the little details that you miss every single play. And I guess that's just not as big when you look at Pete Golding to take another position at a different program.
Yeah. All right, the second story we have today is to rival Coca-Cola Sprite, PepsiCo is discontinuing Sierra Mist in favor of a new lemon-lime caffeine-free soda called Starry. In a press release, the company said, Starry is a great-tasting soda bursting with lemon-lime flavor that delivers the crisp, refreshing bite customers have been longing for. So will y'all be purchasing Starry over Sprite?
No, not at all. But I am glad that Sierra Mist is they're discontinuing that because that was awful. I really hope y'all aren't Sierra Mist fans because that stuff was terrible. Hopefully Starry, whatever this is, will be a little bit better than that. But no, if you pick Starry or Sierra Mist over Sprite, you're crazy.
I think it's more of a nostalgia thing for Sierra Mist. I mean, we all remember Sierra Mist growing up, but, you know, Sprite was always the better choice. And I don't think Starry is even going to come remotely close to Sprite, and Coke products are, you know, generally just better. So
yeah, you can't beat the McDonald's Sprite. That's like the best thing ever.
Spicy Sprite.
Spicy Sprite.
Yeah, and there's one thing to point out for the Starry is they've replaced the cane sugar they used in Sierra Mist with high fructose corn syrup and Starry. Not really a good thing. Really healthier for pure cane sugar, even though it's not healthy really overall, but it's still a better option. All right, Gray, a hectic week in college basketball. What do you got for us?
A big week in college basketball. Just like you said, Alex, very, very hectic. Let's start with the Alabama Crimson Tide. So they went to Bud Walton to play against the then ranked 15th ranked Arkansas Razorbacks and beat them handily by a score of 84-69. Some big performances in that game, especially for Alabama. Mark Sears, 10 for 10 from the free throw line. He had 26 points. Brandon Miller continues his freshman dominance. Even though he only shot 4 shots from the field in this game, he still had 14 points and a big impact. But looking at Arkansas, now 1-4 in the SEC after all the hype in the preseason, all the what's going on, what is happening to this Arkansas team?
Yeah, I think it's an absolute coming apart, starting with the loss at LSU to open conference play, and it's just taking a downhill turn for them. And really, you know, after this loss to Alabama and then going this weekend to Vanderbilt and dropping that game, it's really disappointing to see an Eric Musselman coached team do so poorly this early on. But, you know, they can only go up from here. So I think Eric Musselman is a great coach and he'll light a fire under them and they'll get back to the point they need to be. As far as Alabama goes, I mean, just dominance. I know Arkansas, it's not a tough place to play. Bud Walton Arena was sold out, and you know all these fans wanted an upset. And you know even with Brandon Miller not scoring or not even shooting in the first half, Mark Sears decides he wants to take over and lead this Alabama team in the first half. Then coming back out in the second half, not slowing down, being able to continue their pace, and then you have helpers and Noah Clowney and Brandon Miller from the three. Yeah. They really just put this game away.
Yeah, looking at Arkansas, it's just a lack of three-point shooting all around. Only made 2 three-pointers in this game, I believe. Last week, they only made 2 three-pointers against Auburn. Yep. So it's kind of just a lack of that. Teams can just kind of bunch into the paint, force them to take those shots. Anthony Black didn't play well this game at all. He's kind of been that guy for Arkansas. And then Ricky Council, I don't know why he's not starting for the Razorbacks. He's honestly their best player offensively. He can create his own shot that you really don't see with people like Devo Davis, Jordan Walsh, and all that. But I also like to point out for Arkansas, Devo Davis' defense against Brandon Miller. Even though Miller ended up with 14 points, I mean, he really had to work for those. 6 of those came within like the last 5 minutes of the game, kind of took over when Alabama needed it and kind of extended that lead. But I also like to ask y'all, outside of Brandon Miller and Mark Sears, who on this Bama team can really be a reliable scorer by themselves? And I know Clowney can, you know, spot up for 3-pointers and be in the paint, but who can like take over a game?
Yeah, I mean, you saw Noah Clowney, you know, hold Alabama in a run for some time in this game. And I think in past games, you've seen Noah Gurley take over in the paint. And it's really just all about bench production. They have people who are capable of scoring. Ryland Griffin's one of those guys. He just got to get more efficient. But I think anyone on this Alabama bench is capable of, you know, making a run and carrying this team outside of Brandon Miller and Mark Sears.
Yeah, being deep in talent, especially offensively in college basketball this year, and even especially in the SEC, is showing very, very valuable, and having multiple guys who can get hot and can score effectively in different games when somebody like a freshman star and phenom Brandon Miller only takes 4 shots and only ends up with 14 points. It's good to have a guy like Mark Sears and a guy like Noah Clowney and Noah Gurley, just like you said, Nathan. So I agree. Moving on to talk about the Alabama versus LSU game. This one was not close from the start. I mean, the final score was 106-66, a 40-point win for Alabama over LSU. LSU kind of got a really good start in their non-conference, didn't really play anybody with new head coach Mac McMahon. And then they've lost 4 straight. So Alabama just completely took advantage of them in this game in Coleman Coliseum. Brandon Miller continues to prove that he's one of, if not the best player in college basketball. 31 points, went 7 of 11 from the 3, had 9 rebounds. Again, Mark Sears proving that he's one of the best point guards in the SEC. And then just down the line for Alabama, especially on the bench, a really, really good overall offensive performance. What did you see from Alabama in this game, Nathan?
Shooting from behind the arc. I mean, it was the most consistent thing I had seen all year. And we just didn't stop taking them. We didn't stop making them. And I think the main thing, LSU was, you know, they had 3 three-pointers to start off, and it looked like they were going to stay in this game. And then as you went forward, you just saw they were falling behind because they have offensive possessions where they didn't score. Alabama would come right back down and score in the first 7 seconds of the shot clock. So it was really quick scoring. And then another thing was being on the offensive glass. I think it was every 2 possessions we were getting second chance points, or even 3rd, 4th chances just to go score. And that's just one thing LSU can, you know, handle in the stretch. Going into half, this game wasn't close. But you really wanted to see LSU make an effort coming out of the second half. Just, you know, have some pride. And it just wasn't there this game. It's kind of like the Kentucky game last week where you just need to move on.
Yeah, looking at the LSU Tigers, I don't think they woke up for this game. Felt like they had a sleepwalk through it. Nobody on their team really had a great game. Nobody shot efficiently. Maybe Hayes, their guard, bench guard, played the best out of anybody. But Brandon Miller woke up and felt dangerous. He didn't have that, you know, amazing performance against Arkansas, but he woke up and felt dangerous against LSU. I also like to point out Nick Pringle. I don't know why he doesn't get more playing time. Maybe some of it from Charles Bediako. He really played well in, you know, the blowout win. He had 10 points, 7 rebounds. Feel like he provides a lot of stuff off of the bench that we don't get out of Noah Gurley. I'd like to see him get more playing time.
Yeah, I think one thing that we're talking about is the constricting defense Alabama has. They consistently come down the court. They hustle. They're all over the place. And constantly you're seeing teams have to make these last-second shot clock shots. And, you know, it's not very good percentage-wise for them. But I don't think we've recognized that enough from this Alabama team. And, you know, with this great offense you have to have a great defense if you want to be a national title contender.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to point out this graphic that I saw. I saw it in the Auburn game, and we'll get to Auburn in just a second, but I saw this graphic in the Auburn game from the announcers. They had put out their SEC power rankings for right now. They had Alabama at 1, a very, very large gap. Tennessee at 2, another very, very large gap. Auburn and Texas A&M tied at 3, and then at number 5, it would be number 5, is question marks. I think that's the absolute perfect way to describe the SEC right now. I think Alabama separated themselves at number 1. Tennessee is right there, even though the struggle against at home against Kentucky. And then Auburn and Texas A&M are right on the bottom edge of becoming that tier, but they're not there yet, and they haven't figured it out offensively yet. And then who knows from then on.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get into this debate. I know we talked about Jabari Smith versus Brandon Miller a few weeks ago, and now we're kind of getting into conference play. One thing I've seen from Brandon Miller is he continuously improves his finishing ability at the rim, and then on the other end of the court, being able to block shots, and that's been huge in stretches of games, especially in this Arkansas game. Alex, what have you seen from Brandon Miller to really, improve his draft stock going forward?
Yeah, he's proving he doesn't need to score points to affect the game. I mean, like you said, he's done great things on the defensive end of the court. He averages about 9-10 rebounds a game. But also on the offensive end, he does amazing things, carries the Alabama offense most of the time with Mark Sears. Isn't so Randy Miller has really proved he can just lead a team regardless of what he needs to do.
I agree.
Is he better than Jabari Smith now? Would you say that
again? The way he's playing, the way he's leading this Alabama team, he is as comparable as Jabari was towards the end of his SEC season last year. I agree.
I think he's better. I mean. From this point, I think he's better. I mean,
perimeter player. I think he's a better shooter. Defender, I have to go with Smith. And, post play, two-man offense, I've got to go with Smith.
He's getting extremely better in his post play.
Listen, I was the only person who said he was better the first time. So
I'm on that train now. And Gray's over there talking about Jabari still being better. So
I'd still go with Smith.
Let's see in a few weeks.
Moving in to talk about Auburn. So Auburn played both of the Mississippi schools this past week. First, they went to Ole Miss, a really, really struggling Ole Miss team, so far winless in the SEC, and win in an offensive game, 82-73. Auburn struggled from the three-point line, as we've seen them struggle on the road, but was able to pull it out from dominated performances like Wendell Green, Jani Broom, and Alan Flanagan off the bench, with Chris Moore going down with an injury 3 minutes into the game. Looking at Auburn, we're starting to see them kind of find, we talked about seeing consistency. We're looking at a team that is showing more consistency on the offensive end and still having that dominant defense that we've seen, top tier defense in the SEC. Auburn's schedule is set up really well to get them into February and get them, just like I said, talk about in the graphic, about third in the SEC. What have y'all seen for this Auburn team, especially in this Ole Miss game? I mean, an offensive dominated performance.
Before I speak about Auburn, I'm just going to say, poor Ole Miss. They're getting bullied. They're getting kicked around in this conference. I think they need a little break. They need to be sent to the ACC or somewhere where they can actually compete, because obviously they do not belong in the SEC. I'd say that for a couple other teams, but Ole Miss especially. As far as Auburn goes, I mean, they continue to, you know, make shots from the perimeter. Just kind of what I've been saying this whole season, they just need to improve that, and they have, and now they're seeing success. So, I mean, just keep doing what you're doing, and, you know, as you go into February, as you get into these crucial months, these crucial games, you just need to continue this run and don't let up.
Yeah, just looking at this Auburn team, they have one of the best big threes in the SEC, and Jani Broome, Jalen Williams, and Wendell Green. They really keep that team going. But also like to point out, Alan Flanagan, their sixth man, he's really blossomed into that role. I feel like Bruce Pearl needs to keep him there. I know he started in the game against Mississippi State due to the Chris Moore injury, but I think he plays perfect role as a sixth man. And I think that's really going to be the main reason they continue to win these games.
Absolutely. Alan Flanagan has now had four straight games, double-digit points, something we haven't seen from him since his dominant sophomore year in the COVID, in the weird COVID year. But moving on to talk about this Mississippi State game, I want to mention Wendell Green, obviously 23 points against Ole Miss. And let's see, he had 17 points against Mississippi State. Auburn is going to go as far as Wendell Green can take them. If Wendell Green plays really good, Auburn's going to play really good. If Wendell Green plays average, Auburn's going to play average. If Wendell Green plays bad, Auburn's going to play bad. And that's shown to fruition so far in the SEC. Wendell Green's one bad game was against Georgia. Auburn lost. Wendell Green's kind of average game was against Florida. Auburn won by three. Wendell Green's really good games, he's had the past three games, we beat Arkansas and the two Mississippi schools. So Auburn's going to go as far as Wendell Green could take them. But moving on to talk about the Mississippi State game, this game was Jalen Williams from the very start. He had 13 of the first 15 points for Auburn. He was 4 of 4 from three to start off the game. He ended up with 21 points because he fouled out late in the game and 7 rebounds. Without Flanagan coming off the bench due to Chris Moore not playing, there was no contributor coming off that bench once you know the starters went to the bench and the bench came in, because Leo Berman had to step up into that, you know, start or the bench three role. Where does Auburn go with how long Chris Moore is out? Where does Auburn go to continue that performance that they had in the starting lineup when they started off with a big lead against Mississippi State?
Yeah, like as you said, that's just going to be a struggle for him outside of Alan Flanagan. You know, you have guys in Johan Trayor who don't know what they're doing. They don't know the game of basketball. And I honestly am surprised he is at Auburn University right now playing basketball. So it's really just someone has to step up from this bench. And, you know, going forward, if they don't have someone stepping up from their bench, then these starters, they cannot play a whole game and expect the same production. It takes a wear and tear on your body to play a basketball season and not have help from your teammates.
Yeah, you know, like Nathan said, you can expect these starters to continue to play the way they are. I mean, there's going to be a bad game here or there. Looking at that bench, you would expect a guy like Katie Johnson to step up. He hasn't really had that confidence he had after that loss to Miami in the tournament last year. I just haven't seen it from him. I expected so much more from him this season. But if you're going to look for a guy to perform off the bench, it's going to have to be Katie Johnson.
I agree. Katie has been really struggling with his outside shot, and you can really tell that's affecting his quote-unquote Katie confidence and swag that he played with last season. We just haven't seen that kind of attitude out of him at all to start the season. You get that back, that's who you need to have coming off the bench.
He's had an attitude and it's just been poor.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So Alex or Nathan, you're recapping. Actually,
before we get into this, I want to go ahead and get a Johan Trayor weekly update.
What's the update? He can't score?
He can't play basketball? He looks like a deer in the headlights.
Actually, I believe he scored like 2 points this week.
I'm pretty sure I can go play college basketball and score 2 points.
I don't know. You might get blocked, Alex.
Highest ranked player to ever play here behind Smith. There's no way.
He's just taking a break.
He'll probably transfer next season if I had to guess the way he's been playing.
I agree.
To somewhere like Eastern D2? Michigan, like Imani Bates did.
I don't know if he can last there. Anyway.
You go to Incarnate Wood like Zach Calzada did.
Anyway, let's go ahead and get into the NFL. This week we got Chargers versus Jaguars. Starting this game, the Chargers had it all. They had the playoffs, you know, looking down the road. They thought they were going to go ahead and advance, and the Jaguars just said not so fast. Even after Trevor Lawrence decided he was to throw all these interceptions, they come all the way back and get the victory 31-30. Alex, I'm going to go ahead and hand it to you. What did you see from Trevor Lawrence from the start of this game and then how he finished the game?
Yeah, at the start of the game, he started with 3 interceptions in the first quarter. But he didn't let it bother him. He finished the game with 4 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. I really credit Doug Peterson for kind of keeping that team. You know, we're going to have that mentality. We're going to win this game. But an all-time choke job by the Chargers, man. How do you blow a 27-0 lead to the Jaguars? I don't understand that.
Sure looks like the Falcons from the Super Bowl a few years ago. Look, give credit to Trevor Lawrence for keeping his head up after those three interceptions of the first quarter and the four interceptions overall. And that was a terrible, terrible first half. And just like you said, Alex, credit to Doug Peterson for keeping that team together, keeping his quarterback with his head held high, and they finished out in Chargers. Oh, my goodness. That is an all-time choke job.
Yeah, I'm not so sure if Justin Herbert is not just, you know, Matt Ryan in a costume or not. he might be, with all that playing time Matt Ryan is getting currently, you know. But Trevor Lawrence just, you know, continues to try to improve his game. And when he has these, you know, down spouts, these roller coaster rides where he throws these interceptions and it's so easy to get down yourself. But in this playoff moment at home, he just, you know, keeps doing what he's doing. Yep. And the Chargers just decide they just want to stop scoring, I guess. I forgot that, you know, there's still time left in the game. And here comes Trevor Lawrence, and he comes all the way back. And I think that's probably one of the greatest victories that Jaguars have had in playoff history.
100%.
Yeah, looking at the Chargers, though, I mean, their offensive coordinator, Joe Lombardi, I don't know what he was doing that entire game. He threw the ball 43 times with Justin Herbert. Just with the 27-0 lead. So it's like, what are you doing?
You've got Austin Eckler.
Yeah, he had 13. He finished the game with 13 carries. I'm not sure what mentality he had. You were up 27-0. At that point, you're trying to run the ball. I understand you're going to pass the ball at some point when you're in third down, second down. You want to try to pass the ball. Yeah. But you should be, I mean, Austin Eckler should finish that game with at least 20, 25 carries. Absolutely. But he didn't. And that's just something Joe Lombardi should lose his job over, in my opinion.
If Eckler had 25 carries in this game, the Chargers would have won by 3 touchdowns.
Honestly, I think they just forgot they had running backs on the roster.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. All right, let's go ahead and get into Giants and Vikings in the mediocre quarterback playoff game. Daniel Jones, Kirk Cousins.
Kirk Cousins. They just lose this game.
You know, and honestly, they didn't even play that bad. No. It's just last-second decision where Kirk Cousins wants to throw a check down. I guess check downs are the new thing. Look,
we talked about it a few weeks ago.
Yeah, Josh Dobbs.
Same thing as the Titans. 4th and 8.
Yeah, you think there's a fifth down or something?
44 to go. They've got to score a touchdown.
Doesn't even give the team a chance.
It's a 3-yard out. It's man-to-man and a 3-yard out. And Xavier McKinney just makes the easiest tackle on TJ Hockenson he's ever had. And that's it. I don't understand. I don't understand.
Yeah, they thought there was a new rule implemented that gave him a fifth down, actually.
One of the best wide receivers in the NFL.
Yeah, he just...
Where was he on that play?
He's probably open. Kirk Cousins just didn't see him.
Yeah, also can point out Kayvon Thibodeau doing the gritty on the Vikings logo following that fourth down stop. I thought that was pretty funny, considering what he did last week to Nick Foles.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
And that wasn't funny, but this was funny.
Okay, this one was funny. He just needs to watch his celebration a little bit going forward.
Yeah, I'd like to ask y'all, you know, do you think Kirk Cousins is going to be the future QB at the Vikings, or do you think they're going to move on from him after this season and his consistency of not performing in the playoffs?
I think this is just going to be depending on circumstances, where they are in the draft, who's there in the draft, you know, if they like a quarterback in the draft, or if there's a quarterback that they really – key on in free agency that they want to get. Obviously, Kirk Cousins is not going to be the future of your franchise. That's not, I wouldn't put future and Kirk Cousins in the same sentence together. But, you know, if they identify somebody like, you know, Hendon Hooker in the late second round or somebody like that, if they can find somebody that they really, really like, or if they can find somebody in free agency, I think they could. I don't think Kirk Cousins is it, and I think that showed last night.
No, he did the same thing. He's done. There's no future of Kirk Cousins with the Vikings. This is the same situation with Derek Carr and the Raiders. Right? He's not going to go anywhere in the playoffs. He's just going to make the playoffs. He's going to have this really good regular season, and people are going to get really high on him, and then he's going to come and play Daniel Jones in the playoffs again, and he's going to lose.
Yeah, on the flip side, like you said, Daniel Jones, what did he show that he can be the future of the Giants at the quarterback position?
Well, you go all the way back to where he's drafted, you know, guy from Duke. You don't think he's going to have success in the NFL yet. I think he just, you know, he's been doubted. He has his confidence now. He has this whole team around him, and he has playmakers. He has Saquon Barkley in his backfield, and just that enough is enough to carry him through these playoffs. But he really has his own production of his own. Brian Daboll is such a great coach to put him in certain situations for him to have success, and that's more than a lot of these other quarterbacks can say, especially Kyler Murray, where he's just sitting at home playing Call of Duty right now and watching the playoffs. But Daniel Jones has, you know, the right cast around him to have success. I think it's kind of one of those situations where you can drag and place a quarterback in, and they would have success. Yeah. So I don't think it's just about Daniel Jones. I think it's more about the people he has around him and the coaching staff.
Yeah, just looking at that, I mean, Daniel Jones, who would have thought at the end of the week that he would have the best performance of any quarterback in the playoffs thus far? But he did, and he proved it. And I really think he earned his an extension with the Giants. I think Brian Daboll has a lot of confidence in him. And considering his best receiver was Isaiah Hodgins, and he won the game against the Vikings, he really showed what he can do.
All right, let's go ahead. I want to go ahead and talk about this Bills and Dolphins playoff game where Skylar Thompson, third-string QB for the Dolphins, has to go to Buffalo and play the Bills. They have great home field advantage, and obviously no one's expecting a Skylar Thompson-led Dolphins team to come and give this Bills team trouble, especially with Josh Allen. But Josh struggled in this game. He had multiple interceptions, and you see this Dolphins defense take advantage of him. And on the flip side, Skylar Thompson's just doing what he's told to do, and they didn't have a lot of success, but in the moments they did, you know, it's just a great system from Mike McDaniels. And you know, going forward, I think that you know Tua is in a great position. I say that because I don't know what his plan is with these three concussions this season, and especially it's going to take a toll on his career. But you know, there's a thing to be said about Miami. They have playmakers. They have the right system for a quarterback to come in and take over. So does Miami have you know a say in? Hey, I can you know trade up and get a quarterback in this draft, or I can find a quarterback in free agency, or we're going to stick with Tua and let him do what he's supposed to do. But it's a bright future for this Dolphins team. And as far as the Bills go, I don't know how far they're going to make it in the playoffs if they continue to perform like that.
Yep. I mean, they really need to perform, like you said, Nathan. The Dolphins fell behind 17-0 in that first half, but I really credit Mike McDaniel, like Doug Peterson, not giving up, even though they did end up losing to the Bills. But the clock management for Mike McDaniel and Skylar Thompson, it felt like every time they snapped the ball, there was 1 second, 0 seconds left to you know run a play. And with a young quarterback in his third start of his career in the playoffs in his career, you got to do better than that. You got to give him time to read the line, and he just didn't. And that was really the undoing of them at that point.
On the most crucial play of the game, they took a delay game penalty, and it really throws people off when instead of having a 4th-and-1 to convert, you have a 4th-and-6, and you're having to make these split decisions against you know a really good Bills defense. Yep. That's a whole you know change in the game, and Mike McDaniels has to have a better awareness of the clock because there were several times in this game where I was watching, and I'm just screaming at the TV, "What are y'all doing? Get to the line! You got to go!" And they're over here. I don't know what they're doing. I guess they're watching the fans or something, watching the replay. Maybe they won the hot dog. I don't know.
Fiddle farting around.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, let's go ahead and talk about Bengals and Ravens. Tyler Huntley, gosh, man, that's a hard play. I know he's trying to win the game there, but you got to have better ball security.
Yeah, and Tyler Huntley played well enough to win in this game outside of one play. Outside of one play, he played well enough to win this game. I mean, talk about how they got down there. He ran for about 40 yards down the left side, down the left tackle to get him down there. He played well enough for them to win. You know, obviously Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, that connection continues to show that it's going to be one of the league's best in the future. But man, that one play, it just shows how something can change that fast. And give credit to the Bengals defense. They stuffed him right there, got the ball, bounced right into Sam Hubbard's hand. That was lucky as could be. And big boy ran 98 yards and looked like he couldn't run another yard. But it was a great game to watch and a really fun one to watch too.
Yeah, kind of like the Bills, the Bengals really didn't prove themselves this game. Honestly, they really didn't have a great of a game against a team that many expected him to just blow out with a quarterback of Tyler Huntley. But I think Tyler Huntley, like you said, Gray, played the best he could at that point. J.K. Dobbins came out and said they would have won the game with Lamar Jackson. Not really sure they would have. The Bengals, I think, kind of are way better than the Ravens at this point. The Ravens' offense is really one-dimensional the way they run the ball. J.K. Dobbins also said he should have got the ball at the goal line at that point. Not really sure he would have given them the better chance. I mean, that was just a fluke play. He fumbled the ball. I mean, you can't really expect Tyler Huntley to win you a playoff game at this point.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty egotistical, J.K. Dobbins, to say, oh, yeah, I'm going to definitely win the game if I get the ball there. I mean, that's kind of taking a shot at your teammate, you know, fumbling the ball and throwing the game away. But at this point in time, how much is there a difference between Tyler Huntley and Lamar Jackson? Because they consistently, you know, put up probably around the same performance. I know they're two different style quarterbacks. Well, not really different, but one throws more and one runs more. But with the future of Lamar Jackson and this Ravens, he doesn't have a new contract yet. Going into this offseason, there's going to be, you know, big decisions to make. I mean, who should they stick with?
Ooh, I don't know. I think it, just like we talked about with the Dolphins and the Vikings, that's, you know, that's going to be a weird look at the Ravens quarterback room this offseason, because Huntley will be back. And, you know, he played, just like Alex and I said, he played well enough to win. But now you have a big decision to make with Lamar Jackson with his expiring contract. Do you go and identify a quarterback in the draft? Do you go get somebody else in free agency? Do you re-sign Lamar? Do you stick with Tyler Huntley? That's a big decision to make.
I think if Lamar comes back, they're going to have to get rid of Greg Roman, their offensive coordinator. He's proven that he cannot lead this team offensively to win games.
I mean, Lamar Jackson wants a lot of money. It's not like a small sum where they can just, you know, hand it to him and, you know, return for another year. He wants a lot of money. And if they're performing like the way they did against the Bengals team with Tyler Huntley, why wouldn't you stick with Tyler Huntley?
The only issue is his team's built around Lamar Jackson. Their weapons are very limited. I mean, you have Mark Andrews, and that's about it. So if they're going to trade Lamar, they're going to have to get some pieces on the offensive side of the ball.
Justin Fields?
I don't think the Bears do that, because the timeline of their team is not going to fit Lamar Jackson. And it's very similar to what the Ravens are.
You never know.
I would agree. Yeah, they're kind of in the same kind of boat. You know, the Ravens, I think, are a few years ahead. I think the Bears have a few better weapons and you know, the number one pick.
I mean, if you're looking for Lamar Jackson to move, it's going to be to the Jets or the Dolphins. I think those are the two landing spots you're going to think of when it comes if they're going to trade him or not.
Yeah, I think so. All right, Alex, NBA, what's going on?
You want to talk about the Mac Jones situation?
Oh, yeah, Mac Jones, yeah. So Mac Jones ended up going behind Bill Belichick's back, trying to fix his offense this season. Bill Belichick ended up finding out, and, of course, he benched Mac Jones for Bailey Zappi. That whole situation was pretty poorly handled by Bill Belichick. I think instead of identifying the problem, which is their offense sucks, I mean, I think we've seen that every single week this season. The quarterback wants to do something about it, and he wants to make a change. He wants to fix it. He wants to actually perform better and have success. But Belichick is too high on his horse to say, oh, yeah, we need to change the offense. But he's going to instead say, you're wrong. You listen to me and have fun sitting on the bench. And that's the way he wants to lose games. I mean, that's pretty poor from a head coach. He needs to be setting an example for his players and not going against them.
Bill Belichick has kind of kept his old school kind of coaching style, and it really worked with Tom Brady. Obviously, they won a lot of Super Bowls and won a lot, and it just doesn't seem to be working right now. And never really worked with whatever they had before Mac Jones, and is not working with Mac Jones right now, because there's some major issues that this Patriots team in general and front office need to address this offseason. Whether they think Mac Jones is the future and they want to keep him and they want to build around him, or they want to make a change at the leadership of this franchise, which would be a massive, massive story.
Yeah, I think it's been proven that Tom Brady made Bill Belichick at this point. Many people were debating if it was going to be the other way around or whatnot, but I think Tom Brady proved it after winning at Tampa. I don't think he's that great of a head coach. I think he's just kind of being lackluster in the absence of Tom Brady. He really hasn't – I don't know why he didn't name an offensive coordinator till the preseason. I don't know who else in the league could do that and get away with it. I don't think – maybe Sean McVay maybe in L.A. But I just don't understand why Bill Belichick keeps getting away with these kind of things. And at the end of the year, he said he didn't really give Mac Jones any reinforcement that he's going to be there next year, the starting quarterback. Kind of just said Mac has the ability to play quarterback in this league. I know it's kind of – it's not really showing support. And you expect them to give him that support when they drafted him so high in the first round.
It's not Mac Jones' problem. I mean, he's done what they've asked him to do. He's tried to perform the best he can in this certain situation, and they're not giving him help. I mean, this team has one of the worst wide receiver corps I've ever seen. Devontae Parker, he's aging. He's pretty much making his way out the league. Jacoby Myers, he's not the greatest. No. So, I mean, you need to go get a wide receiver. And until then, I don't think this Patriots team can have success on the offensive end. There's no doubt that their defense is capable of being very good. Yeah. Very good. Mm-hmm. Matthew Judon is all over the place. Christian Barmore, they have big names on this defense. It's just a matter of this offense needs help. And I think it needs to start with the coaching staff, change in offensive coordinator. They need to, you know, loosen it up a little bit. They don't need to run the ball every play because they're not going to get that far down the field if they don't pass it. And as far as I'm seeing it, it's not Mac's problem.
Yeah, like you said, their wide receiver core is pretty bad. Well, their offensive line's even worse. They allowed Mac Jones to get sacked a career high 34 times this season. So, I mean, the offensive side of the ball is just terrible. I don't think Matt Patricia should be a coach of the NFL at this point. Him or Joe Judge. I don't know why they were given that offensive coordinator job. It's just atrocious all over.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, let's get in the NBA now.
All right, so the NBA released their second returns for fan voting this past week. I know I don't want to read off all these lists and everything, but what do you think your starting five for each conference?
Starting five, obviously you're going to have LeBron. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Jokic playing out of his mind, another MVP-type year. Anthony Davis plays good along with them, but I don't know if you can make a case for him this year or not, just because he's had struggles from time to time. Yep. Obviously, Steph Curry and Luka should be probably the first pick. He should have his own team, maybe. Yeah. Ja Morant continues to play well. And I think Shea needs to make his first All-Star game. I think that's the biggest thing I've been on, is that Shea has performed out of his mind. And just because he's on the Thunder on a losing team, he shouldn't make it. Well, now you look at it, and the Thunder are doing better than the Lakers currently. So what's not to say he should make it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what about the East? That was your West.
Yeah, that's my West. My East, Kevin Durant, of course, Giannis, Jason Tatum continues to put 50-point games up. I mean, it's an easy scoring lead now. Kyrie continues to play well, and Donovan Mitchell with that 70-point performance. And he does well on the Cavs, so there's a spot for him. James Harden, maybe. I'm pretty iffy on James Harden, just because he's kind of that second option behind Joel Embiid, and he doesn't really have insane numbers consistently. But, you know, Joel Embiid's probably going to make it.
Yeah.
And outside of them, I think, you know, there's open spots for people.
Yeah. What about you, your starting fives?
Yeah, it's hard to go opposite than what Nathan just did, especially in the West, because it's hard to find. You got three front court spots, obviously LeBron, obviously Nikola Jokic has to be up there. And then at the other one, Anthony Davis, you said he's been hurt a lot. Same goes with Zion Williamson. He's been hurt a lot. Same goes with Andrew Wiggins. He's been hurt a lot. Paul George has been kind of lackluster this year. I mean, do you throw a guy like Lauri Markkanen in there? Maybe you could throw him in the mix. I think he's more of an all-star bench player probably. But I guess you have to put Anthony Davis or Zion in there. But the guards is pretty simple. It's Steph Curry and Luka Doncic. In the East, I think you've got to consider Joel Embiid. I just don't know who you put him over, because you have to put him over one of Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Jason Tatum. And you can't put him over one of those three guys because of how well those three are playing, especially right now. And then for the guard positions, just like you said, Nathan, you know, James Harden, I'm really iffy about as well, just because of his inconsistency. And, you know, he plays for a team where he's not the stud anymore, like he was on the Rockets, because Joel Embiid is that guy. So I think you got to go with Kyrie Irving and Donovan Mitchell at that. But NBA All-Star fan voting has got to be the stupidest thing ever.
It really is.
It is so bad. We saw that in, 2016, 2015 with Zaza Pachulia almost making the All-Star game because of it. Like, the NBA had to step in and not allow that, because that was blasphemy. You cannot – this is so stupid. The fan voting is so bad.
Yeah, I think it's just identifying favorites at this point. And of course,
it's a popularity
contest. Yeah, with Zaza, I mean, people are just going to promote someone like that who just intentionally hurts people. Obviously, he's not in the league anymore, so I'm not going to really talk about him or highlight that. But as far as Joel Embiid, maybe he just needs to be a point guard. Maybe he can just change his position right now, and then there's your starting five.
Yeah, looking at my West, I had Luka and Shea outright. I think with Curry's injury, I don't think he should make the starting lineup. I think he'll make the backups just out of the name Steph Curry. I think Ja Morant might have a chance to start over somebody like Shea. Yeah. But I think Shea has played much better than Ja this year, and he's proven that time and time again. In my front court in the West, I have LeBron and Jokic. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Even though LeBron's been hurt, I feel like he can't just not start LeBron.
Yeah.
And then in the third spot in the front court, I had Lauri Markkanen. I know there's guys like AD, Zion, but like Gray said, they've been injured, and I really don't think they've solidified themselves in that role. Yeah. But Lauri Markkanen's kind of carried this Jazz team, who many thought was going to be, you know, tanking for Victor Wembanyama, and he really just kind of ruined that opportunity for them by playing the way he's been playing.
Yeah.
And then in the East, I had... For my front court, I had Embiid, Tatum, and Giannis. I don't have KD in there just solely based on the fact of his injury. I know he's playing good up to that point, but I think Embiid, Tatum, and Giannis have just been playing well by themselves, and they haven't been dealing with injuries as much. So that's just kind of the reason behind KD's not being on my starting five. And then in the front court, I think Donovan Mitchell is easily the number one guard in this conference, the way he's been playing for the Cavs this year. And then at the point guard position, I was kind of thinking Tyrese Halliburton just because of the way, you know, he's been playing with the Pacers and the performance that team's been having. But I don't think he's going to start, depending on the way the voting goes. But that would just be mine. If you're looking at the way the voting's going, you'd probably expect somebody like Kyrie or James Harden to get it.
Yep.
Wait, so Alex, you don't want Kevon Looney to make the All-Star team?
Because he's receiving votes. I mean,
yeah, obviously.
So is Austin Reeves. I mean, come on, guys.
Golden State has five
players. These are realistic players.
Golden State has five players that are in the top 10 in their position in their conference. This is exactly why. And Austin Reaves, just like you said, this is exactly why they need to completely abolish this fan voting.
It's just because of the amount of fans these teams have. I mean, the Lakers and Warriors probably the biggest fan base.
Big markets, yeah.
And then you look at somebody like Derrick Rose in New York. It's just because his name's Derrick Rose.
Yes.
But what about Nicholas Claxton?
Because it's the Brooklyn Nets and it's another.
I don't think that there's that many Brooklyn Nets fans.
I think
Laker fans and Warriors fans.
But I'm not sure how you fix it at this point, because if you don't do the fans, you're going to do the players, or you're going to do the press. All those are going to be biased.
Everyone just needs to stop voting, and let's just be done with it.
I think it needs to be chosen, like maybe the commissioner chooses it, and he looks at the stats and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, or like an outside person.
It'd be better than fan voting.
How about this? We'll just let Roger Goodell pick the All-Star team for the NBA, and then flips it, and Adam Silver will go in, you know, yeah.
Do the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, it makes sense, right?
Yeah. Goodness gracious.
Well, they got to fix the All-Star voting in the NBA, NFL, NHL, MLB. Everything needs to be fixed because they're all terrible.
No, Alex, this is all you.
All right, so we'd just like to announce that we have launched a website called studentsofthegame.net. You can search us there. We'll post articles. You'll have a link to our podcast on Tony Curry Radio Network. So check us out there. We really love for you to read all our articles. We're putting them out for everybody. There's a paid subscription. There's a free subscription. The paid you can get for either $5 a month or $50 a year, correct, Ray?
Yes, that's right.
All right. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.